Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I am Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stash Ziolkowski.
And it is, it's supposed to be Monday. It's not really Monday, but we're calling it Monday, October 16th. That's right. 2023. And if we can get the date right, we might actually have a radio show. How are you, Stosh?
I'm okay. I just came from the doctor's.
Probably don't need to tell us all about that.
No, I just, we had a doctor's appointment and he needed me to get some blood work. So we had to go to do the blood work and then get right home. And so here I am, a little bit late, but.
You're right on time for the rest
there
of us.
There you go.
So I'm glad you're here.
So, yeah.
I forgot to tell our listeners that our theme today is photographs two. So we're going to range into some new territories talking about the photographic process. And I wanted to thank Andy Offit Irwin for introducing our show with his original composition, Tarry Here.
Yep. Always love to hear him. So
did you get to hear Lynn Ford last week at Speak?
Oh yeah. Did you?
You didn't go in person. We went in person on Wednesday because I couldn't do Tuesday.
Right. Okay.
I had intended to do Tuesday, but that didn't happen.
Did they have a decent turnout at the train station?
They did. And she was wonderful, of course.
Of course. She was wonderful on Tuesday also.
Adam even told a little tiny story about seeing Lynn perform for little tiny kids, 2 and 3 year olds, as well as the older kids, and that was fun.
Right. Oh yeah, because she went to a daycare center instead of a school. That's great.
Yeah.
That would be a challenge.
She was well up to the challenge. The kids were totally into it.
Yeah, I once did a job for Marsha Wong because she was stuck in New York and she had a gig. In fact, she had 3 gigs and she asked me to take them because she couldn't leave where she was. And one of the gigs turned out to be at a daycare. And she told me it didn't really register my brain. She told me these 3 and all this stuff. And which was nice because I got a chance to do different kind of things. And this at the daycare, but I wasn't even thinking when I said the words. And when I drove up to the place, I still was not thinking about, oh, these will be little good guys, really little guys. And so I went in and the woman said, oh, I thought a lady was coming. And I said, well, she's stuck in New York. And so you're stuck with me or something like that, Anyway. It was kind of fun, but she told me this. I took me to a room. I said that had that chair set around, and I sat down. And then the door opened, and these little people came in. And as they came in, I kept thinking, "Okay, big Stosh, here's a challenge for you. Talk about a photographic moment." And it was so much fun. I had prepared some stories, but not a one came into my mind. It's like, and their kids are really nice. They're all looking at me really nice. So I introduced myself, and I figured I was stalling, but I went and I said, there were only about, I think there were about maybe 14 kids. Something like that.
That's enough if they're 2 and 3 years old.
Oh, yeah. So, and I said, So, you know my name because I just told you. How about let's go through the room and see who you are? Even as I was doing it, I sounded like you sound like one of those guys that does clowning shows and shows up drunk. But anyway, it worked out because I got, you know, I had each kid tell me their name and I made a remark about it. Some of them were interesting names that I could think of something to say about, you know, and then.
Did you remember their names?
Well, I don't know if I would have been able to say all of them back to them, but I got most of them, I think. And the outgoing ones were easy.
Yeah, because they're in constant motion.
Right.
So you want to remember them.
And then I got this, to spur the moment, this brilliant idea that I wonder if they know what the difference is between rotation and,
and wow.
So I taught them about the moon, how the moon is always facing the earth with the same side and that it turns slowly and everything. And they were like staring at me. And I said, who would like to be the moon? Of course, only one hand went up at first, then more of them. And so I did that little experiment where I had the moon walk around the room and look at all of us without, you know, and keep it. And I got such good reactions, better reactions from those young children than I ever got from high school. As far
they
as
they were willing, they're willing to take your word for it. They're not arguing
and,
with you.
And they actually had great comments about, oh, wow, I did turn around because I was facing the other way and now I can't see that wall. And it was just great. So we wound up with every child in the class becoming the moon.
Of course you did. They all had to be the moon.
And the lady who I guess was, I don't know if she was really a teacher or what, whoever brought the kids in, she was an older lady. You know, she wasn't like a young teacher or anything. She looked like she might have been somebody's grandma.
And she could have been a teacher for a long time.
But she might have been, you know, an older teacher. But she hardly said anything, except that when we finished, she came up and talked to me for a minute, and she said, this was the best program I've ever been involved in for the little kids. I said, well, thank you very much. And I felt like I should not accept any money. However, it turned out to be very pleasant. And even later, Marcia said she had a good report about me. So,
that's
you know.
Did you talk about green cheese with the kids?
Green cheese?
Yeah, that the moon is made of green cheese.
Oh, God, no. I never would say something like that to anybody. I like to tell people the truth about the moon and stuff like that.
Oh, my.
Not those lies that people tell them, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah. So, well, anyway,
before we go too far down the garden path, why don't you tell us about Speak coming up?
Well, the next time Speak is going to do something is going to be on November 14th and 15th with Bill Harley. Well traveled, well read, well educated, well spoken, and well loved. or maybe I don't know. Maybe it says well loved. I thought maybe it said he loved Wells. But so on Tuesday, November 14th, Bill Harley will be entertaining us with his music and stories at the Reynolds Hall.
Very good stuff.
How about that?
I'm so impressed.
I used my trick again.
I know you did.
You know, and then on Wednesday, November 15th, he will be at the community center, which is just down
community
the street.
Community club.
And I'm looking forward to that. He always does a great job. Interesting.
And since this is Shepherdstown that we're talking about for Speak, maybe you should give the website.
SpeakStoryseries.com. And
you
can get information about times and places. Even I just mentioned a place, but you, places, but you can get details on signs. Details on times, not signs, and places, and the dates for sure, and information about donations and costs. And if you want to support Speak, you can send us some more money. We can always use money.
Okay. Well, I was so fascinated by your story about the daycare center and Marsha sending you there, sicking you on the daycare center, that I forgot to start my clock.
So oh, okay.
I hope maybe you did.
Well,
we know what
I've got. Since we began flapping, 6 minutes.
You're kidding.
No, 7 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was talking a lot.
I thought it would be much more than that.
No, it was. I did pay attention. So.
Would you like to tell a story?
Well, I was going to talk about the slideshow, kind of, sort of like. You know, what as a second time follow-up from our last show. And because I thought I would just continue with some of the things that I was looking at in my pictures as slides. And so here we go. One of the nice things about having these modern devices are the pictures. We could take pictures, all the time. I took a lot of pictures when I was in the Army, but they were the kind of things that you had to do. I did it, with a camera, and then take a roll of things out of the camera that film, take it to a drugstore or a photography kiosk, one of those places in the shopping center, and leave it there, and then they would give you a few days later you'd be able to get your printed pictures. But I don't have as nearly as many pictures of me being in the Army for 3 years as I do of sometimes of the last 3 months of what's going on in my life. And it turns out I have thousands of pictures in this little device called an iPhone. And the amazing thing is that you can get just collect shots of everything. So the neat thing is we went away for a few days. We met Terry's son and two of our grandchildren from Utah, from Salt Lake City, who were in Frederick visiting. Terry's son Peter was visiting his dad, and so we went to Frederick and got an Airbnb. Terry made all these arrangements, of course, and it was a real nice place. And we did a number of activities which were just terrific. We had Grace, who's 13. She stayed with us on Friday night at our Airbnb. The place was really nice. It was not really big, but it had 3 bedrooms all on one floor. And each bedroom and the main room had their own television. And each room had its own air conditioner. And it was a pleasant stay. And then on Saturday night, we had Matthew stay with us. And that was good because we could spend, what would you call it? Quality time with the grandchildren one at a time. And then it turned out to be a really good visit. Terry and Peter took the kids to Washington, D.C., where they met a few other people that were involved with the family on Saturday. And they got to see the monuments. It rained a little bit, but it didn't spoil the day for them. And I stayed home on the possibility of watching football all day because I can't go on a walking tour. You know, shortly after you begin a walking tour with Stosh, it's, you know, drag Stosh a couple of feet, sit them on a bench and go look at things, and he'll sit there until you come back and collect them. And so I didn't go on a walking tour, and which was sensible. Also, I didn't get to watch television football because the televisions were all set up so that you had to have a password for all these streaming services. And I didn't have a password, of course, for the streaming services. But I did it. There was one part on the television that said, watch for free. So I clicked on that, and it turned out that they had some movies. So I wound up watching some Godfather movies, which are one of my favorites. Anyway, so and then on Sunday, some of the group got on bikes. We went and had breakfast in at this bike shop combination, and so Peter's dad, who rides a recombinant bike, which is one of those words that is took me a while to get hold of, and they rented a bike for Terry, Peter, Grace, and Matthew, and off they went and rode for 6 miles in downtown Frederick, and saw some nice things, and that was really nice. And they did that on Sunday morning, so it was the whole weekend was really very nice, and we got to do a lot of fun things with the kids and with some of the adults, and so it was worthwhile. So that is just a little reminder story about how much fun we can have with your family, especially since we got to take pictures and stuff.
And now you have those pictures forever to remind you forever.
You're right. That is true, forever. And with all the pictures I have in my phone, I'm going to stop now and have you talk because I have to organize something.
Okay. Well, I listened over the weekend to the stories we did last week. Well, I listened to my own rambling on and on anyway. And I also spent most of the weekend with Eileen Evans up in Garrett County in a coaching session for this session I'm doing on my dad called Bill Crawford's First Slideshow. And she was very helpful to me. She helped me think more deeply about the point of all of this, and think about the messages for the different stories that I want to tell. So last week on the radio, I really was not telling stories. I was telling about my dad. But that did turn out to be helpful to me in thinking about what it is that's most important to me. And I got to a place with Eileen that I have three time periods that I want to talk about. So the first one I talked about at length on the radio last week, and it's up, it's posted, so anybody can listen if they'd like, but it's about that first part of my dad's life. As a child, with his own father, and then after his father died in 1922, when my dad moved into his grandparents' house, all eight children and their mom went back home to her parents, and what that was like for him growing up with his grandfather as the head of household. And I already shared a lot of that on the radio, so I'm not going to do that again. But that message from that time period became clearer to me, so I'm happy to have that, and we'll be able to focus on specific stories better. Then the middle section of the story that I want to tell on the 23rd, four stories in the round, is about my dad during World War II and the interactions that he had with the brass, the military brass. He was stationed on the island of Saipan in the Pacific Theater and already had quite a dossier of political activity and was known in the places where he had lived as being an activist, a community activist. And somehow the army had gotten hold of some of that information, and he was questioned by his commanding officer, who kind of called him on the carpet and asked for explanations of why the powers that be were asking about Bill Crawford. And my dad didn't really know, but he did think about it, and he and his commanding officer ended up having a good conversation. And he became kind of popular with that guy and his cronies and was pretty successful as a mess sergeant and ended up mentoring a lot of young men who worked under him in the two mess tents that he supervised. But his own political education to that point and his learning how to talk to the military brass was, according to my dad, a growing process for him. And just watching the unfolding of the war and the outcome of the war was really important to him figuring out what he wanted to do with his life and figuring out how to get along with people in a positive way, even while being a rabble-rouser community activist. And he had stories about some of the men that he worked with, as well as the Japanese prisoners of war that he met, who were also there on the island. And there are some photographs of them. That's really interesting to me. But his primary, most of his stories from that time are about the men in his unit, the Black unit that he was stationed with, and the work that they were doing building roads on the island of Saipan, coral roads, where they would dig out places where the army needed the roads to go and then pave them with coral. And he took so many pictures. That's where my dad really got into photography. He had taken mostly family pictures up to that time, his nieces and nephews and cousins, but at this point in the Pacific, he was taking pictures of working men. And I think that's where his labor work and his interest in working men and women really came out. There are pictures of, I'm guessing he took at least a couple photos of every man in his unit and labeled their names are on the back of the photographs. Most of the photographs he's in himself along with them. And sometimes the photos are staged. He had one picture of the guys playing craps, gambling on the floor of a barracks. And he was careful to tell me that that was a staged picture, but you can't tell that from the photograph. It does look like they're having a good time, but other than that, it looks perfectly legitimate, like a perfectly legitimate, illegitimate game. And I think by the time he came out of that war, he was very confident in his ability to speak to almost anybody about what was going on in current events, what was going on in the community that they were living in at that time, whether that was the island of Saipan or a big city. And he was able to articulate what he thought was wrong with the world and how to fix it. And that's where I think he really began to see himself as having the potential to help other people understand the world and to make a difference in the world. So I was happy to have Eileen helping me figure all that out, because I was not, all of that was not quite so clear to me at the beginning. But I feel like I made good progress, and I'm very happy that I have all those photographs, because it's a record of my dad's life and of what was important to him. Not only the old family photos that he saved and cataloged from 150 years ago up to the present, but also what was important to him at certain points in his life and what he wanted to record for posterity and the people that he wanted to honor in those photographs. So that's what I have so far. And I could go on, but I'm enjoying your stories too, Stosh. So let's hear what you got.
And I, you know, I do have a question about it, because as long as everything is working properly, Monday, we do have, you know, we used to always talk about Brother Tony Tuesday, because we would go down to the Baltimore region every other week to spend time with my brother and take him to on his medical visits and stuff. But part of what we did this past week, this week on Monday, we spent Monday going to three different appointments for my brother at the VA hospital, and talk about a slideshow. We were in, you know, it's really an interesting thing. Get to park underneath the hospital itself, and they have valet parking. Doesn't cost you a thing, because it's there for the veterans. And Tony got to go to his three appointments, and we didn't get home on Monday night until, I think it was probably after 6 o'clock. And we started Monday morning at 8 o'clock, before 8 o'clock. We didn't even go out to lunch or go out to get a meal. When we were finished with Tony and his medical things, Terry had gotten us sandwiches in the middle of the day while we were doing that. And normally we go out to lunch, or, you know, maybe an early dinner when we work with go down to help my brother with his, you know, visits and that. But we were both exhausted, so we just dropped him off back at his assisted living, and made sure that they would have arrangements for him to have dinner, because he was pretty tired, and they would take dinner to his room. Anyway, it was a really long, long, long stretch out day. So we have another one of those coming up on this Monday, and I am looking forward to hearing your stories about your dad on Monday, if we're not wiped out.
Fair enough. Know,
which would be, unless I've been in a hospital or been sick, I have never missed any of the stories in and around since I've been around. How about that? I've been around stories in and around.
You've been around a long time.
We'll have to see. You know, I did have, okay, so that's just rambling, but let me tell you about, I got a phone call last week from a dear childhood friend of mine who is coming to the Baltimore area for just 2 days to see a niece and her son and husband. And he lives in New Mexico. And we had talked on the phone about the possibility of me meeting up with him in Baltimore. But that's not going to happen because he has very little time. He's only going to be there for 2 days, very little time for a meeting. And driving to Baltimore, which would be 90 miles or so each way, to just have a half an hour meeting doesn't seem like a sensible thing to do, especially since I also have medical things to get taken care of this week. I'll have to call my friend Stan in a little while after the radio show today. I'll call him and tell him that I'm sorry, but I won't be able to meet up with him. It doesn't make sense to do a 200 mile round trip to spend 30 minutes. And even as I say that, I think to myself, now, what if it was a girl? What if it was a girl? But it's not. So anyway, okay, so you're up.
And it's really funny. Well, I've heard about Stan before, so I may ask you some questions about Stan.
Okay, but yeah, but give me a minute. I need a I need to mute.
Okay, well, one of the parts I hadn't talked about yet about Saipan and my dad being there on the island for several years was his interest in the children and the children's school there that the Americans started for the indigenous population, the youngsters, and also the women that he got to know who were native to the island, many of whom worked for the Americans and who he interacted with on a daily basis and became friends with them, got to meet their families, their children. And but most of them who were working for the Americans were single. So they were unmarried at that point. These were fairly young women. Not all of them very young, but most of the ones that he met were unmarried. And all of that, as you might expect, all of that, those cultural differences and getting to know expectations. He wasn't romantically involved with any of them. It was strictly friendly and working relationships, but it was interesting just listening to how difficult it was for them to get food independently. I mean, the Americans did provide some food, but not everybody wanted American food. And so learning how to navigate the indigenous people of Saipan had a difficult time during the war. Food was in short supply for much of the time. And of course, they were caught between two opposing armies, two opposing cultures. And a lot of people died in the process. From my dad, he mostly talked about the things that he learned, the things that were surprising to him. And I will try to go into more of that on Monday, the 23rd, when I do Bill Crawford's first slideshow as the title.
Wow.
Stories.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I hope you can make it.
I do. I intend to. we would not make it only if it was, if I was too tired at the end
too
of the
much.
Day.
Right.
And if it was too much.
I have a question about Stan. Where does your friend Stan most of the time when he's not in Baltimore?
Oh, he's almost never in Baltimore. He lives in New Mexico, and he's a retired bank executive. He was the president of a bank, and member of our childhood group of guys that hung out together, who was very successful. Some of us have been successful. I've had careers and been successful in life. And Stan, I know he may be the most successful of us. I think it's pretty hard to beat being a bank president. And also he's had a lot of success. Of course, his first thing when he called last week, his first remark was, I said, "Hi, Stan, it's good to hear from you." He said, "Can you believe we're 82 years old?" which is the question I've said to my mirror a number of times lately. How could you be 82 years old? But I am. And as long as I'm smiling, it's kind of funny. But if I don't smile, then I look in the mirror and have a serious face on me. I say, it is amazing to be 82. I never expected to be this old. And thankfully, even though I've had a lot of medical interactions this past year, that's a great word for it, isn't it? Medical interactions. It's kind of, you know, not threatening. Just, you know, it's like kind of, I was reading some notebooks or something. I think my health is pretty good for all that. And I would mention, and this is not to do anything about me personally. However, I do have a new addition to the collection of things I've had put into my body that weren't there when I was born. And don't necessarily, not everybody would like to have things.
Do you have photographs of them?
Oh, I do. Actually, I do someplace, but right now I don't know where they would be. They're in a box someplace. But yeah, I have two hip replacements and a shoulder replacement, and the latest addition to my incredible, you know, super kind of power things that people have been putting in my body is a pacemaker. And that is actually in my heart that was inserted a couple of weeks ago. And so I now have, I carry cards now that say I have hip replacements. And now another card that says I have a shoulder replacement because they might set off alarms. And now with this pacemaker in my heart, it is actually inside my heart in the right ventricle. I have a nice, fancy plastic card that says what it is and what its number is and all this, and that it will set off the alarms. So I can't go through those things. They have to scan me with a wand or something like that. Anyway, that is like science fiction as far as I'm concerned with all that stuff. Wow. Okay. So back to the slideshow. The nice thing about the photos in my iPhone is that they're in categories. For instance, one category, it says, is people. And so if I just go along and touch the picture of the people, and there's one of you, I see that there are things that we have done together that are kind of neat. Performances. At Stories
We've
in
done
the
that
Round.
Together. Yep.
Yes, a number of times. And also other storytelling events. And because you're a storyteller, there are lots of things in my phone about storytelling events that we have done. And Also about pseudo events that we have done.
Pseudo events?
Yeah. Well, a few years back, we did 3 2-person plays at Stories in the Round.
Mm-hmm.
And it was storytelling in a different way. But I think it was well received. And we did 3 shows that I think if we were professional actors, we could probably have taken each of those shows on the road and performed in different cities and at least entertained a few people in different places. And I know they were well received. I was very pleased when we did those. I mentioned them because I came across a lovely picture of you and I in, I'm not sure what kind of clothing we would call it, but we were doing Diaries of Adam and Eve.
It wasn't really clothing.
It was. No. We were in white stuff.
Underwear.
like white long underwear. And, that was. That was for Adam and Eve.
Yeah, that's what you just said. You said Diaries of Adam and Eve.
Okay, I thought that, yeah. Okay. Anyway. Looking at that now, I'm not sure that would be the appropriate costume to wear. If we, you know, doing it.
I think of them as baby pajamas because they were portraying babies.
Right. And another picture I have of us at a card table sitting. And when we did the guys about the captain of a fire station. On the day of 9/11,
yes,
and who gets help from a writer, war correspondent, a woman who was used to talking about terrible things and writing about terrible things, because the captain had been asked by some families to speak at a memorial for his men who were killed on 9/11. He wasn't on duty that day, but drove down to the site once he heard what was happening. And the reason he needed help with that was he just was not a speaker. He did not ever think of himself as a person who would speak in general to the public or anything. But the wonderful thing about doing that together was that you did such a good job portraying the war correspondent, because at the beginning she's very positive. She is sure that she can get him to reveal things about these men who worked under him that will please the families. And he is a wreck at the beginning. He can't even imagine that he's going to be able to say anything that will be reasonable and that he would do a decent job. But through their interaction and discussions, and her questions to him are probing but very gentle, he winds up feeling much better about it. She takes notes during the discussions, and at the end of this short play, it's about an hour, a little over an hour long, he is at a podium speaking at the memorial service. And the last thing she gets to do during this presentation is she is angry about what has taken place, and she is not in a good place. And I had done that show twice. I had done it in Arkansas, and then we did it. But I can distinctly remember that night while I was getting ready to talk at the memorial service after you had done your less speaking. I was shocked to realize just how big an impact the discussion about the loss of those men had on this woman who had written about war and had been in war zones and was really a very strong individual. How shaken she was by that. And she had taken all of the angst and terror of that kind of on to her in order to let him, in order to help him be able to pay tribute to his fallen men. And that's one of the things that I think is really very positive about that show.
It was a good show. It's very well written.
Yeah.
The woman who wrote the play, who experienced who actually had the experience of talking
right.
the fire captain through the process, she was very much engaged and
right.
thoughtful and articulate about what the experience was like for both of them.
So, I have had in the back of my mind a number of times, I'd like to find another play for us to do, a two-person play. But I haven't come across a good one yet. So.
Okay.
And in that vein, I should mention the other play that we have done, Love Letters. You played an interesting character in that one, too. Who was really something, and in that one you were no longer there at the end because that the person that you played there at the end of that play had passed away.
Yeah,
and
that was pretty moving, also,
and it was very moving. It was, it just dawned on me, two out of the three shows that we have done, two-person shows, is your character is gone.
Yeah, I just realized that. You killed me off before.
That's awful. Okay. All right, you're up.
Oh, my. Well, I see John is visible. I wonder if he's listening.
Yes.
Do you have any commentary you'd like to add?
No, I'm just
observing.
Cooking, and no, I'm not. I'm just.
Well, we're observing you. So.
Yes. Well, maybe I should just get off the beach here.
Right.
I didn't actually hear all of it. I just heard the last few minutes because I was was in the kitchen.
Right.
Okay.
Well, okay. So
true confessions.
I did. I have another slide that brought up something.
Okay.
I was looking at people here. I have a picture of me standing with a group of nine young people. From a time back in shortly after we moved to the Pittsburgh area, after we left Arkansas, moved to the Pittsburgh area to take care of Terry's mom, I was hired to perform for a group called Best Friends. And it was a special night. And Best Friends is a group for people. Young people, although some of them weren't real young, some were in their 30s, but most of them were young, either teenagers or just beginning teenagers to in their 20s. And they were people who didn't necessarily have friends. And the Best Friends group was started so that people who go to school and maybe didn't have friends to hang out with and who would felt like an outsider because they were different in some way and not necessarily that they were challenged or something, but they were a different personality or they didn't fit in with the group. And there's always people like that who need somebody, and this group was started and I went and did a performance for him. I was so impressed with the people and with the group that for a number of years, a couple times a month, I would drive about 100 miles to attend this group on Tuesdays and tell them stories and do things with them, play games, talk about the stars, and tell them about my adventures as a teacher. And it was very rewarding, extremely rewarding. Since we moved in 2017 out of the Pittsburgh area, it was no longer reasonable to drive to that event. I wound up during the pandemic doing some Zoom storytelling with them. And I'm no longer doing things with them because of all kind of interactions that have taken place, not negative on anybody's part, but just negative because of the world, because of health and things. But that was a very rewarding thing for me to do. It was such a nice thing to do that I didn't accept the payment I got for the first job when they hired me to speak. And they did give me travel money, you know, gas money when I was going up there. But it was storytelling in the best way for me. I didn't need to have any kind of payment. The payment I got out of that was being able to see their faces, how they enjoy the stories. And also I got to have them tell stories at times, and it was lots of fun to have them involved in that.
By the time you were doing that storytelling on Zoom, were all the young people familiar with you? Had they all heard you tell live?
Most of them had, but there were some new people in the group, and they were pretty surprised, because they didn't have someone else coming in and doing that after I moved, and they seemed to enjoy it.
I remember you talking about the sessions and coming back right after you'd been there, and yeah. Nurturing it was for you, how much you enjoyed it.
Just incredible, you know.
Yeah.
And it was more so than regular storytelling, even though that is also from the first time I went to a school and performed in a classroom or in an auditorium. I was thinking I should have been doing this my whole life, you know. And for a good while, I was envious of the young storytellers that I have met, a lot younger than me, who started at a younger age and could enjoy that incredible, the joy that I know I've experienced and you have, and all the storytellers I've met. We'll always say, you know, they get so much more out of it than the kids do. And then a lot of times they're not talking to kids. I've done in some incredible groups, church groups, performed in church a number of times. And Terry and I performed together in a church in the Pittsburgh area. And that it was, you know, just an incredible feeling to provide entertainment for people that they would not have gotten normally. And I always like to have, when I got a chance to perform, and Terry would play music and sometimes and sing, not much, but she did a few times with me. And I always felt like if she was there with me every time, I would have been an internationally famous storyteller. because of her.
Well, you are a walking testimonial all by yourself to the joy of storytelling.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you think so.
That's yeah. Right. Okay. Well, I'm thinking about the other photographs that I want to talk about on Monday the 23rd at Stories in the Round, and thinking about the conversations that I had with Eileen as I was making a case for the things that I want to do. But most of all, what comes through is just the power of these photographs and the photographs that my dad protected and cataloged and kept track of. I mean, there's some very old photos. There are tintypes and daguerreotypes, among the first commercially available photographs for the general public from the 1850s, 1860s. Really, really interesting. And of course, I have an interest in these people that are featured because they are people that I'm connected to. Even the ones that are not blood relatives are people that were important to people that I am related to. So all of those stories are important to me. And I do hope I get to tell a lot of them from ancient history almost on the 23rd. And then of course, there's lots more recent photos. I will have some slides from my parents' dining room walls that were curated as an art project by the Philadelphia Folklore Project and preserved in the conference room of the Philadelphia Folklore Project. But just researching what is featured on those walls, because it's been a very long time since I've seen the walls in person. They are installed as the conference room at the Philadelphia Folklore Project, but I haven't been there for at least a decade. So I will be relying on photographs on the slides, both the ones that my parents had a complete set of, as well as what's online showing what's still visible at the Folklore Project and how that room, that conference room, is used with those posters and political cartoons, political headlines, event. I can't remember what they're called. When you whitewash a poster and put it up on a brick wall or on the side of a building. Handbills, I guess.
Handbills are like that.
Some of them are very large that are up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that will be interesting to relive that and remember what it was like to feel like in 1968, 1967, when I first started seeing those images cover my parents' dining room wall and then watching it expand and grow over the years.
You were in elementary school, right?
No.
Close.
started college in 1967, and my first visit home in late fall of 1967 was my first sighting of their new dining room walls, because they had moved into a new building. So I'm looking forward to that. And actually having some new thoughts that I'm still developing. So some of this is just my history, my family's history, my dad's history, but some of it is also making connections to things that are going on in the world now and how to respond when there's such devastatingly bad news every day, right? Frightening things happening, and trying to learn how to keep an even keel and not be bowled over by tragedy. it's helpful to have these stories. So I'll be working on that as well as I put things together for October 23rd. And I hope if there's anybody listening to us right now, that some of them will come out and hear these stories the evening of Monday, October 23rd at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike. I see you saying those numbers with me.
Right.
And if you want to get tickets or you want to share the information with other people, you can go to Fanny Crawford Storyteller and see it on Facebook. Or you can call me 301-730-1638, or you can email me at fenitsky@hotmail.com.
Okay. And you have piqued my curiosity, because I'm wondering, did you and Eileen come up with a way of you doing your father's voice? Or that, because I know you were you talked about
this. Yes,
that,
right? We talked about it briefly. It was not a major part of our conversation,
right.
But I did talk to her about opening as my dad and doing 2 to 3 minutes in my dad's voice so that he gets to introduce the slideshow himself. But I didn't make any decisions. So you probably won't know whether or not I'm going to actually do that until
until you actually do it.
Yeah. That's right. I think it would be difficult for me to sustain my father's voice for more than a few minutes, because I don't have early experience practicing his voice. All the other voices I do, I've been hearing for a very long time and trying them out in my own voice, and I haven't done that with my dad. We'll see how that goes.
Well, you know what? I think we're down at the wire.
Are we?
I think so.
I think you're right.
We began 58 minutes ago, according to my...
Well, that sounds like the end then.
Timepiece, yes.
All right. Well, I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasia Olkowski.
We've been your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour this today at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland, offering our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for John Case and...
Yes, well, this is a country music day, of course. Although I have to confess, I have not been playing country music all day. But anyway, I don't know what's coming next. I'm going to decide that after you guys.
A surprise!
And we're late in the day, and usually coming up pretty soon is at 7 o'clock is your own program, you know, but probably won't be today's version. It'll probably be
okay.
And then we have an exciting I think the program where Karen and I were out at the picket line is coming up around 8 o'clock. That was
okay.
Interesting. Discussion with a woman who's the president of the UAW GM parts plant there, and that's on strike, and so that was pretty interesting. Everybody's very vocal on that picket line. I've been to a lot of picket lines. I've ever met one where everybody wanted to say something.
Well, maybe you haven't been on the radio.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so. Yeah, that was excellent.
Modern times, John.
Right. I mean,
you know, everybody has an idea.
The press say, oh, well, the leaders, let her or him, you know, do that so they don't say something stupid or whatever. But not this time.
Well, that's a good thing, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, most of the just people were coming from pretty different situations. You know, like the young people were just shocked to find themselves out of the sort of gig work market, you know, where, you know, you have a job for a while and then you don't have a job and then you have another job. And so they were trying to get connected to a place where you could invest in for, you know, longer time. And they were pretty, you know, enthusiastic about the goals of the unions in this case. I think others were a little concerned, but everybody had a, you know, there was a wide area of agreement, despite people came to it from quite diverse directions.
To hear.
So anyway, all right.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
So, are you doing okay, Stosh?
Oh yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm trying to think. Next Monday, I do have my brother next Monday.